Hare Krishna. Welcome. So I entitled this lecture today, Lord Chaitanya, the Golden Avatar, in honor of his appearance day in about a week's time. All of the incarnations of God are mentioned in the Shastra, the scripture. If you can't find them there, they're not incarnations. But Chaitanya is considered to be the hidden or covered incarnation. Yet he's predicted, but he's not as perceptible or well known as the other incarnations of God, of Vishnu, of Krishna, such as the Dash Avatar, the ten major incarnations that pretty much everyone who understands is familiar with, understands Vedic tradition. Ajanu lambita bujao kanaka vadato sankirtanaikapitaro kamalayatakso vishvambaro jijavaro yugadharmapalo Vande jagat priyakaro karuna avataro. This verse is from Chaitanya Bhagavat. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu and Sri Nityananda Prabhu, whose long arms extend to their knees. They have splendid golden complexions. They inaugurated the congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Their eyes resemble the petals of lotus flowers. They are the maintainers of all the worlds, the best of the Brahmins, the priestly class, the protectors of the religious principles for this age, the Yuga Dharma. They bring happiness to the people of the world and are the most merciful of all the incarnations. Chaitanya is not a usual or normal or traditional incarnation of Krishna, of Vishnu. Why? Because all of them are generally pure Vishnu Tattva or God energy. That's what they are, in varying degrees or varying percentages. But nonetheless, that's what they are. They're all Vishnu or God potency. Chaitanya is not that. He is that, but he's a mystery. He's more of a contradiction. He's not usual. He's highly unusual. Because not only is he Vishnu Tattva, or an incarnation of Krishna himself, but he is also carrying Vishnu Shakti, an incarnation of the divine feminine, the goddess energy herself, in the form of Radha. So it's Radha and Krishna come together, combined. Very unusual. So there are a couple of purposes for the incarnation in this way. And the first purpose is to, why did Krishna do this, take this particular incarnation? Because he wanted to experience Radha Bhava. When Radha and Krishna, the divine feminine and the divine masculine, are together in the spiritual realm, or whatever realm they choose to play out their lila or their pastimes, they experience the joy, the bliss, the ananda of loving exchange between the masculine and feminine principle. Not on our level. We should not confuse it with the mundane experience that we have between the male and the female, because theirs is transcendental. It is not affected by the material modes of nature. It is not contaminated by the material energy. It is far, far beyond that. It is not contaminated by lust, which is personal desire for satisfaction. But it is pure prema, pure love, in a loving exchange. So it's beyond all that. Sometimes people who don't understand this about Radha and Krishna project their material consciousness on them and say that, oh, this Krishna, he's a debauchee. He's just running around with these women. No. It's not like that at all. Just because you may want to run around with a bunch of women, that doesn't mean it. Krishna's mindset is identical. It isn't. So that's the first thing he wanted to experience was Radha Bhava, which means what? What Radha experiences by being in love with Krishna, by being Krishna's loving consort. What exactly does she experience? Krishna knows what he experiences. He experiences ever-expanding love, pure love, unadulterated, unconditional. But he's wondering, well, I wonder what she's feeling. Have you ever wondered that in your relationship with your wife, with your husband, with your paramour? Do you ever go, I wonder if she loves me as much as I love her? You actually heard them say that. I don't think you love me as much as I love you. Yeah, show of hands. Yeah. I think I love you way more. Or, I think you love me way more than I love you. My love could never possibly rise up to the level of your love. Even on this level, we think like that sometimes, or we feel like that sometimes. No. So Krishna, he's a curious guy. You're curious. The Godhead is curious. We're all curious. So he's going, well, what does she experience exactly? I want to know. So together they appear in the form of Sri Chaitanya. Now, if you think having a relationship with another person is difficult enough, you put the two of them in the same body and see what happens. It is said that Radha's experience of divine, expansive, unending, eternal love for Krishna is 10 million times more intense than what Krishna experiences loving Radha. Whoa. 10 million times. And Krishna says, well, I wonder what that's like. A reasonable question. So you and I can wonder all we want about our paramour and how much they're experiencing love for us, but we can't enter into them to find out. But God can. And he did. So that's number one. First reason for taking the incarnation. The second reason was for us. Was to spread love of God to the fallen souls in Kali Yuga. That's us. That's why his famous name is Patita Pavana. Savior. Pavana means savior or liberator of the Patita. Patita means the fallen souls. The souls, what do you mean fallen? I'm not fallen. I'm sitting up straight. Fallen means you've fallen down from the spiritual world. And here we are. You know? No one gets out of here alive, my friends. No one. Not in this world. Proof positive. Fallen souls. So, That's what the purpose of the incarnation is. Now, in the Bhagavatam, there's this verse which you've heard quoted many times, Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishna Sangopangastra Parshadam Yagyai Sankirtana Prayair Yajantihi Sumedasaha. So what does that mean? In the age of Kali, intelligent persons, Sumedhas, intelligent persons, will perform the congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord to worship the incarnation of Godhead, who constantly sings the name of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish like Krishna's, he is Krishna himself. Although he has the nature of Krishna, he is the color of golden light. He is called the golden avatar. He is accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions. When God comes down to the material world in the various forms of the avatars and incarnations, he often has his weapons with him. So, what are his weapons? Well, besides Shankha Chakra Gada Padma, the conch, the chakra, disc, the club, the lotus. He has various other ones. But in this incarnation, he has his associates with him, like he always does. But his weapons, there are no weapons. He's not killing anyone off like he has done in past incarnations, killing off huge demons that are causing disruption in the universe. So he's not killing off anybody, physically speaking, but he's killing off the demoniac mentality or the dark mentality or the self-serving mentality or the materialistic mentality. That's what he's doing. And by this action, we become freed from the from samsara, repeated birth and death, the wheel of repeated birth and death. So that's what he's doing. Now, how rare or how significant is this incarnation, you ask? And I say, highly significant. Why? This quote is from the Atharva Veda. I will descend to the earth after the passage of 4,000 years of Kali Yuga. After Kali Yuga, the Iron Age has begun, and 4,000 years have passed. At that time, I will come. I will appear on the earth on the bank of the Ganges River, of the Ganga. I will be a tall and saintly Brahmin devotee, in other words, priestly class, and I will have all the auspicious symptoms of an exalted person. I will exhibit renunciation. And I will have all the auspicious signs. What do they mean by auspicious signs? You see those prints on my hands? You got them too. When the Godhead appears, and on the feet, they're not like these, like mine. They are very special. I won't go into details, but that's why you can always see who's come by looking at the hands, looking at the feet, looking at the face. You can always find out if you understand the science. I will be a devotee practicing bhakti yoga, and I will taste the rasa of my own devotional service. Okay, now, Prabhupada has told us, our founder Acharya, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Krishna descends to this planet, Krishna himself, once in a day of Brahma. Brahma, the creator, lives a long time, my friends, a long time. Once in a day of Brahma, or every 8,600,000,000 years, our years, solar years. Okay? From the beginning of Brahma's day lasts for 4,320,000,000 years. We have the 14 Manus of each day of Brahma. 14 Manus are the progenitors of mankind. And they each have a period. During the appearance of the sixth Manu, then Krishna comes. Okay? Right after the sixth Manu. So, Krishna appears in Dwapara Yuga, which is the Bronze Age, just before Kali Yuga, right? And then, when Krishna appears, which is right kind of in the middle of Brahma's day, if you will, right in the seventh Manvantara, Krishna appears. Krishna disappeared 5,000 years ago, historically, that's a fact, and Chaitanya appeared 500 years ago. Chaitanya only comes right after Krishna has appeared. And Krishna only appears once in 4,320,000,000 years. Are you with me? And Chaitanya right after. Guess what? When was that? In relative time to us sitting here today, that was like yesterday. Correct? You with me? So how blessed are we? How blessed are we? We're the first of the crop here. You know, we're getting the introduction here. We're the first ones that have been drawn to this degree of mercy by the Godhead to take up this process and get off the wheel of repeated birth and death. More importantly, to develop this loving, reciprocal relationship to God, with God, like Radha does. Like Radha does. That's your invitation. I'm explaining to you the invitation that we all have received. I don't think it came in the post. It wasn't engraved particularly, but there it is. We, my friends, are very fortunate souls. You can recognize that. You don't have to. It's up to you. You can take advantage of it. You can reject it. Doesn't matter. You're still being given the opportunity. Okay? Here's another quote from the Atharva Veda. In the seventh Manvantara, in the beginning of Kali Yuga, the Supreme Personality of Godhead will, accompanied by his own associates, descend in a golden form to the earth. He will teach the chanting of his own names. There you go. Now, there's five major figures that Chaitanya appears with. There's many, many other associates that come with him, because he elicits the help of higher beings, saintly beings, liberated souls, as well as demigods, which, for those of you who don't know what a demigod is, it's like an angel, archangel, living on higher planets, heavenly planets. And he elicits help from some of them, so they take incarnations into what we would regard as human forms and come down and sort of help out with things. That's what they do, and interact with Chaitanya. Big job, you know. It's a big job. So, Chaitanya, as I've already explained, is the Godhead and the Shakti, the Divine Feminine, combined. Nityananda, in the blue on the altar, he is in other Leelas of Vishnu or of Krishna. He is who? Balaram? Who else? Lakshman. Yeah. Okay, so that's Nityananda. He is God as the guru figure, Bhakti Swarup. And Advaita, the older gentleman, is a combination of Mahavishnu, or Karna Dakshai Vishnu, and Shiva combined. So he is Bhaktavatar. And then Gadadhar, who is next to Chaitanya, is a male form, but that is the Divine Feminine. He is the Divine Feminine. So he'd be Radha energy. And then finally Srivas, who is on the right there, is the incarnation of the devotee. He is the Jiva. The first three are Vishnu energy, and Gadadhar is Vishnu Shakti, and Srinivas or Srivas is Jiva. He's a soul, like us. What's the difference? He's a pure devotee. He's a pure devotee. He's a liberated soul. Yeah. Okay. What was the atmosphere in Bengal when Chaitanya took birth? What was going on there? What was happening at that time? So I'm going to read a little bit from Chaitanya Bhagavat. Well, most of the material I got for today came from Chaitanya Bhagavat and Chaitanya Mango, those books. At that time, the Brahmins who are the priestly class, they are considered to be the head on the body of the cosmic man. And the Brahmins are there to help people to intercede on behalf of the people to God, and to do help them with certain performances, rituals, sacrifices, you know, whatever priests do on behalf of people, you know. So but some of the Brahmins sometimes, because of their higher birth and their birth in Brahmin families, sometimes they have a sense of self-importance. Have I met any Brahmins like that? Oh yes, I have, in this lifetime. Are they all like that? No, they're not. Some are. At that time, the Brahmins looked down on Chaitanya and the Vaishnavas, his followers, and rejected them as sentimentalists. Because if you're serious about spirituality, if you're serious about Dharma, if you're serious about Vedanta, then you're serious. And that's how it is. Chanting, dancing, carrying on, playing instruments. No one does that. It's not how you do it. So it was unusual. It was different. And it would be frowned upon. Chaitanya preached that the highest class was not the Brahmins, but the servants of God. The higher class were actually those who were servants of God, not just those who had a certain birth. Initially, he had hundreds and thousands of lower class followers. So because Chaitanya was not so much concerned with the caste system in that sense, and the different levels of society that exists, he was spreading the word to everyone, not just to the Brahmins, for example. So people from every level of society were embracing the teachings and the Yuga Dharma, the chanting. But he had at the time a few thousand among the higher classes. So this was after he'd been established there for a while. Well, I was thinking about this statement. I thought, well, it's kind of the same for Prabhupada in India. Prabhupada came here in 65, not here, to New York, to the West in 65. Having tried for several years to establish Krishna consciousness in various places in India, didn't take. Didn't really work. There wasn't very much interest in it in India. Came to the West, so I came where the rest of us who were not always raised in a higher spiritual consciousness, but it happened to be the right time, the right place, where there was an explosion of consciousness in the 60s and people were looking for something that wasn't simply materialistic. You know, and I was there at that time, and we were essentially rejecting the materialistic values of our parents because we thought there was more to life than just having a nice house and a good job. Nothing wrong with that, but so the same thing for Prabhupada. Chaitanya preached that service is paramount over a position of authority or self-importance. It's more important to serve. Humility is more important than pride. One of the first snares that one can fall into when you begin, when you start on your spiritual path, is when you've been on your spiritual path for a while and then you start to feel, I'm making some advancement here, you know, I'm becoming very spiritual. Just look at me, you know, it's pretty good. When we start to think we're advanced spiritually. So who thinks that? The soul? Does the soul think that? Does your soul act like that? No, it doesn't. That's the ego. The ego thinks it's advanced because the ego is always looking, you know, you're wonderful. Keep it up, buddy. You're wonderful. Patting yourself on the back. So Chaitanya said, no. Tranadapi sunichena taror eva sahishnuna. You must become like the blade of grass, humble, more tolerant than the tree. So pride is not recommended. Whereas in the Brahmin community, there may be pride. Chaitanya would weep out of compassion when he was told of the misdeeds of a sinner. His companions thought his heart would break out of concern for the suffering soul. If this is bhakti yoga that we're talking about, that Chaitanya preached and inaugurated in his way, this is all about the heart, my friends. It's all about the heart. Yeah, there's a very extensive and complex philosophy behind it, which I'm trying to touch on without putting you to sleep. But that's not what it's about. It's about expanding love and expanding compassion. And Chaitanya himself was the embodiment of a degree of love and compassion that we hadn't seen. On the one hand, he expressed the love of Radha for Krishna. Selfless, unconditional, without personal motive, all-consuming, and eternal. Have some of you ever fallen in love and been consumed by that love? And you can't get him out of your head or her? And that's what you think about all day, all night. You wake up in the middle of the night, you can't sleep, you can't eat. I won't ask for a show of hands. I know there's got to be one or two in the room. Truth be told, are these bad sentiments, negative sentiments or emotions? Not really. They're not negative. They're actually very natural to us. Otherwise, how would we have them? They're very natural to the heart. But we fell in love with that guy. What was I thinking? I don't know how I even fell in love with him anyway. I just hate him. Or some such thing. Or, you know, he doesn't love me, I love him. He doesn't love me. My love is unrequited. How many movies and stories have you seen of unrequited love? Can you count that many? No, you can't. So this is about, and whomever you love, my friends, it's temporary. Somebody is going to die. And I love the songs where they say, my love is eternal, I will love you for eternity. Okay, well, that sounds good. Is it possible? It is possible that two souls could come together again in a future life. Yes, indeed, it is possible. Has it happened? Yes, I've seen it doing Vedic astrology. I've seen souls that have been together in other lifetimes. And they're together again. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. So it's possible, but not eternally. Not eternally. So ultimately, if you want that eternal loving bond, there's only one person you can direct that at, and that's God. On the other hand, Chaitanya expressed the love of Radha as divine mother for suffering humanity. So it wasn't just about Radha and Krishna's and their love together, it was about us and our suffering. How can we relieve the suffering of all these souls? If you love, then you must learn to love unconditionally. You can love a human being. That's not that hard for most of us. You can love children who come out of your womb, whom you produce. You can love good friends. You can love your family. But can you love everyone? Can you love humanity? Can you love universally? So, that's what God does. And he does it unconditionally. Now, what was going on in Nadia, which is the area of Bengal, when Chaitanya was born? Although a Muslim government had overthrown the established government, the Muslim Qazi, the governor, it was a Muslim government in charge at the time. It was in many ways a state of anarchy, and there were bands of mercenaries and dacoits roaming around unchecked and preying upon the populace. It was a rough place. And it was at the same time a place of, Navadvip was a place of high learning. And there were many, many scholars there, many scholars from varying backgrounds. That also was there at that time. And people were coming from all over India to study in Navadvip and develop their scholarship. And their scholarship would normally be around Sanskrit and the various scriptures and Vedanta. But there were also a lot of atheists at the same time as well. So we said there were bands of mercenaries and dacoits roaming around. They were unchecked. The government wasn't keeping them under control. Kind of sounds like Ireland right now, doesn't it? Or at least rural Ireland, where all of these poor people are being preyed upon by actual bands of organized thugs and thieves. Isn't that what's happening right now? Well, it is, in case you didn't know. So, who were the top guys who had their own band of mercenaries and the most successful at it at that time? Jagai and Madhai. So I don't know if you know that story, but those were two troublemakers, major troublemakers, who were delivered by Chaitanya and Nittai. You deliver the worst of them, the rest may follow. Correct? What they used to say. If you're in trouble and there's a band of people, a band of thugs coming at you, what do? You go up to the biggest guy and you whack him one, and when he falls, the rest will go away. Have you heard that philosophy? Well, I was taught that when I was a kid. I'm not advocating it. I'm reminiscing, sorry. Okay. So, Jagai and Madhai, although born Brahmin in Brahmin families, they had taken up Tantra. They had become Tantrics. Do you know Tantra? Have any of you ever studied Tantra? Tantric practices. Tantric is the left-hand path. Have you heard of the right-hand path and the left-hand path? Guess where you are right now here. This is the right-hand path. If you took a turn somewhere and you expected to be in the left-hand path, you're in the wrong room. Tantra is the left-hand path. Here we begin in sattva guna, mode of goodness. We begin from the mode of goodness. I'm not saying we're all in the mode of goodness and enlightenment, but that's where this begins. And Tantra begins where? What mode? Ignorance. It has a destructive element. Left-hand path has the destructive element. Yeah, I sure it'd be mixed with Rajas, undoubtedly. Why did they take up the left-hand path or Tantra? And in order to cope with the violence of the Muslim and Mughal invasions from the north. The Muslim and Mughal, well, Mughal is Muslim, invasions came from the north, northwest, from Arabia into India. Did the Indian people go and provoke them? Stand at the border? Oh, yeah? No. They didn't. Give me a list of countries that India has invaded since its inception, thousands of years ago. Give me the list. Of all the countries India invaded, give me one, please. None. None. Not one. Muslims came in, caused havoc, let's not even go into the details. Right? So things were rough and ready because that's how they treated it. They just killed people off. They destroyed temples. They smashed the deity. They did this, that, and the other. They tried to smash the culture. Even the British didn't try to do that. They knew better. Maybe they learned. I don't know. So that's what was going on at that time. So the tantrics indulged in what? Meat eating, drinking wine, unrestricted sex, and in the case of Jugai and Mudai, murder. They were murderers. So the tantrics, when they make an offering, if they have a sacrifice or a ritual, when they make an offering, what do they offer? Tell me.
A human being.
Blood.
Alcohol.
Alcohol. Meat, raw meat, flesh of various animals and humans. Jugai and Mudai. That was going on at that time. Sounds scary to me. But what do we got here? We've got industrial slaughter of animals in abattoirs. And they don't chant any prayers. I talked about this last time I was here. We have murder here. We have unrestricted sex here. We got lots of pubs. But there's no prayers involved. At least the tantrics were saying the mantras, we could say. Right? Respect, the tantrics looked down on the Vaishnavas as too gentle, too weak, sensitive, refined. That's not what you need. You need to be tough, rough and ready. That was the culture at that time by some of these groups in this anarchistic society. That's what Chaitanya went into. And he's going to preach love and compassion. Now, use your imagination, my friends. Oh, they're going to take to that in no time. You kidding me? Respectable citizens and Brahmins doing Harinam Sankirtan in a public place. Many of Chaitanya's followers were Brahmins. They were respectable citizens. Many of them were scholars and learned people. And you do that in the confines of the temple or in the school, in the Gurukula, or in certain circumstances in a sangha. You don't do it out on the street. What's this all about? So they did it on the street, which was what? Revolutionary. Wasn't it? It was revolutionary. And that makes people angry. Some. Not everybody. Some go, oh, that's a novelty. And some get real angry. Depending. And they react. So this had never been witnessed before. Now, Sri Chaitanya's birth chart. That is his horoscope, his astrological birth chart, when he was born. In Vedic tradition, the birth chart, the horoscope, is always looked at and consulted when? Upon the birth of the child. Why? You don't know who you got. Who is this? You don't know. You can coo and make sounds and all the things you do with the baby. And of course, we know that every mother thinks her child is the most beautiful child ever. In some cases, that's true. In other cases, less true. But we don't know who we have unless we understand the karma and the nature of the child that's been born. So when do they do this? Within the first 10 days? 10 days to 6 months, traditionally. And for the reasons I've already given, and what else? How can you possibly name a child when you don't know who you're dealing with? How can you just give a child a name because you like it? Wait a second, people do that all the time, you know. Yes, I do know that. Sometimes the name suits the child wonderfully, correct? And sometimes the name doesn't suit the child at all. And sometimes the child changes the name at some point. Oh, that name, I never used that name. Don't call me that. Have you heard that? Don't call me that. Well, I thought that was your name. I never go by that. So, we name the child according to the birth chart. Does that guarantee the child will like the name? No, but it gives us a step up. You know, we're a step ahead anyway. Okay. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was born on February 18th, 1486, around 6 p.m. I give the time 6 p.m. On the full moon. Full moon. During an eclipse. Do you want to be born during an eclipse? Nope. Don't put your name in for that. Eclipse is when one of the luminaries, either the sun or the moon, is being shadowed by Rahu or Ketu, the two shadow planets. Either one. The Chaya Graha, the shadow planets, Rahu and Ketu. In Western astrology, Rahu is called the north node of the moon. Ketu is called the south node of the moon. They move like this. I'm not going to get into the whole explanation, which I could, because that's not why we're here today. But they're always 180 degrees apart. So, the moon was in the sign of Leo with Ketu at the time of Chaitanya's birth. If you read the Shastra, the scripture, it tells you that big demons are generally born during eclipses and during fearful, terrible storms. It does say that. But Chaitanya is quite the opposite of a demon. He's the Godhead. Why, you ask, would he have chosen to be born during an eclipse when it says right there in the Shastra, avoid that? Because traditionally what is done in Vedic India when there is an eclipse, what do people do? Do you know? They stay inside, but back in the days of Krishna, way back, they would go out and they would immerse themselves in bodies of water up to their waists, such as the Ganga, the Ganges River, or the ocean, I mean, not deep, but, you know, any body of water. And they would all do what? They'd all do Sankirtan. They'd all chant mantras or chant the names of God. That's what they would do. in order to protect themselves from the ill effects of the eclipse. And for those of you ladies who are pregnant or going to be pregnant, planning to be pregnant, you never, ever view an eclipse. It's considered to be detrimental to the fetus in the womb. Now, if you don't accept that, that's fine. If you want to test it out, it's up to you. But best advice, don't view an eclipse if you're pregnant. So that's what they would do. They would chant. So when Chaitanya's born, everybody's doing what? They're doing Sankirtan. And what's the purpose of his mission? To get everybody to chant the holy names of God. So, is that not a good start? Coming out of the womb, immediately, everybody's chanting. And he hasn't said a word yet. He hasn't even told you what he's doing yet. And everybody's chanting. Brilliant. I'd say that's pretty good. Right? So that was Moon, K2 together. Now, I'll say a few things about this chart. I want to say a lot. His mother was very, very dear to him, Shachimata. She was very attached to him. Before he was born, Jagannath Mishra, his father, and Shachi, his mother, had had 8 daughters. 8. And they all died. They all died. Then they had Vishvarupa, Chaitanya's older brother. He lived. But after a time, he took sannyas. He became a renunciate. And he left home and you never saw him again. So, you know how the parents dote on the baby? This is my baby. Your baby is your baby. Your youngest is your youngest. I don't care how old you are or the child is. Child could be 64, it's still your baby. You know, in that sense. That's how we are. We're sort of wired that way. That's my baby. So, Chaitanya appeared. Now, I'm sort of jumping ahead a little bit, but anyway, his mother and he had this very, very close relationship. And of course, she was his mother in other lifetimes. She was Devaki. In Krishna Leela, she was Devaki, who gave birth to Krishna and spent time in the prison at the beginning of her marriage. So we won't get into that story. But Moon Ketu, I can tell you, having done, this is my 40th year doing Vedic astrology, I can tell you that Moon Ketu is also a yoga for a madman or a kind of madness. So was Chaitanya a madman? Oh yeah, absolutely he was a madman, but not in the clinical sense. Not that he had to go to a facility and be treated. There was a time let's say this, in the initial part of his life, he took to scholarship very, very powerfully. And anything he heard once, he committed to memory. By the time he was 16, he started his own school. And teaching his fellow pupils, he became the guru figure. He was a brilliant, brilliant mind. Scholarship of the absolute highest order in all of the shastras, in Sanskrit grammar, everything. Then things started to change. He hadn't yet stepped into his role as the Patita Pavana, as the savior, as the one who would inculcate the Sankirtan movement through the world. That hadn't been switched on yet, if you will. He was a devotee of Krishna from his birth. That was there. But his mission had not yet appeared, if you will. And then he started to manifest symptoms of what people thought were epilepsy. Epilepsy. Fits. K2 Moon together? Epileptic. I can show you lots of them that have epilepsy. The madness could also, in some cases, be brilliance. Some people, and I've said this to you before, some of us, when we're children, we look around and we go, who are these people? How did I get here? I just don't get this. I don't know what they're on about. I don't fit in. They don't see me. They don't get me. I'm different. I feel like an outcast. So that can also be, you don't necessarily have to have Moon and K2 together in the chart, by the way, to feel that way. I just feel very different. And he was way different. I mean, he was like way ahead of the curve. Yeah? And then, so where are we going with this madness? The madness came later in his enmaddened state of love for Krishna. When he went into his mode of Radha Bhava, the love that Radha experienced for Krishna, which we said earlier was 10 million times more powerful than what Krishna experienced for Radha, that created a kind of a madness where they actually had to reel him in and sort of look after him. And that was those symptoms came more at the latter part of his life, when he was in Jagannath Puri. How many years did he live? 48. Only 48 years he was gone. He went to Katwa. Do you know how old he was when he went to Katwa? He was married to... He had two marriages. Both to the goddess of fortune. That's pretty good, I'd say. You know, if you can get married to the goddess of fortune once in your life, that would be something. You can pull that off twice. You must be God. Jagannath Mishra, his father, died when Chaitanya was 10 years old. So that left he and his mother alone, because his older brother, Vishwarupa, was already gone. They didn't have any money. They were poor. That's what Sachi says in various places. We didn't have anything. Very simple. Then he was married to Lakshmi Priya. And when Lakshmi Priya appeared in the family, all this wealth started coming in, and all of this facility and all of this abundance began to appear. You want wealth? You need more money? You need more facility? You need more abundance? And you better make friends with the goddess of fortune, because that's how it comes. If only I work harder. Yeah, well, you can work harder. Why not work harder? Pray harder and attract to yourself the goddess of fortune. There's a lot of stories. I'm not going to get into all of his stories because most people know them and they're numerous. He went to Katwa, And Lakshmi Priya was living in Chaitanya's house with his mother, so they were living there together, the three of them. And Lakshmi, of course, she was so attached to Vishnu, to Krishna, to the Godhead, that she was bitten by a serpent, by a snake, and she died while he was away. And it's explained that this serpent was the serpent of separation. That she loved him so much, she was so attached to him, that she missed him, and she died. Subsequently, some time later, he married Vishnupriya. And she came from a very, very wealthy family. And again, the wealth was there. There's a statement here. Let's see if I can find it. This is Chaitanya Bhagavat, and this talks about his, since I spoke about it already, his name-giving ceremony. I'm going back now to his babyhood. On the day of the name-giving ceremony, Nilambar Chakravarti, that was his grandfather, arrived, while other learned scholars and friends also assembled, as did numerous ladies. Everyone talked about what name the child should be given. After considering all the points, and Nilambar Chakravarti was an astrologer, looking at his horoscope, his kundali, then they said, as soon as the child was born, famine ended in the land, and the farmers were blessed with long-awaited rain. So from this we find out there was famine, and they hadn't had rain. As soon as Chaitanya was born, all of that changed. In this way, healthy and happy conditions returned to the land at his birth. This is very similar to how Lord Narayan had previously rescued the earth in his various incarnations. Thus it was concluded that his name should be Vishvambar, the sustainer of the world. And the ladies favored the name Nimai. He was born under a neem tree. That neem tree is there. You can go to the Chaitanya Math in Mayapur. The neem tree is there. You can visit. So he was called Nimai. It was kind of like his childhood name, nickname. And then, I don't know if they do this through India, but we learned it from Prabhupada. What they do when a baby is a toddler and can crawl around, they present him with various articles to see what he's going to be interested in for his adult life, or what he's drawn to, including books, rice, gold and silver. Well, books, it would be a scholar, would be a, you know, Brahminical. Rice would perhaps be a farmer, Vaishya. Gold and silver, that would be a Vaishya as well, you know, money man. I was thinking they were missing putting maybe a weapon there for the Kshatriya or something, you know. But do they do that? Tell me. They do that. Yeah, okay. So that's what they do, and see what the child gravitates to. Well, Chaitanya went right for the Srimad Bhagavatam. He went right for the books. And he became, of course, an amazing scholar. Okay. Here's another statement that I found to be very interesting. In my other this is Chaitanya. This is a quote. In my other incarnations, I took fierce forms and powerful weapons to obliterate many huge and invincible demons. In Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, however, I'll use my weapons of my transcendental holy names, qualities, potency, and my prema bhaktas, my pure devotees. With these, I'll conquer the people's demoniac mentalities. That's what I said earlier. What are we conquering? The demoniac mentality. We're not killing people off. With these, I'll conquer the people's demoniac mentalities and award them pure devotional service to Radha and Krishna. Then he says, now without considering anything else, everyone come with me. We'll destroy sinful activities in the age of Kali. This method of sankirtan, congregational chanting, or simply the chanting of the holy names, you can do it quietly in your own home or wherever you are, is the Yuga Dharma. It is the Dharma for the age. In this age, it is very, very difficult to practice spirituality because everything is pretty much going against that. Just look at the billboards and the ads. It's going in the other direction, my friends. So this makes it very easy. There's a statement here. If somebody just... Here it is. Told you I had a lot of pages. In Kali Yuga, there is no need for the performance of severe austerities or opulent sacrifices. Whoever worships the Supreme Lord will meet with all success. Even if you have some interest in having a relationship to God, that is so, so rare in this age. So Chaitanya is offering love of God, not just freedom from repeated birth and death, getting off the wheel of samsara, but developing love for God, which includes everybody else. That's what's being offered. That's the mercy. That's the boon. That's the benediction that's being offered. So Chaitanya at the time said, even if the sinners reject religion or flee to other foreign countries, still they're going to get the mercy that I've come here to deliver to them. Because I will send my Mora Senapati Bhakta to go there to these foreign places and deliver them. That's what he said. That's Bengali. Mora Senapati Bhakta. Mora means my. Bhakta means devotee. Senapati means military field commander. General. That's what he said he'd do 500 years ago. Did he do it? Who was it? Srila Prabhupada. Bhaktivedanta Swami. That was his field general. He said he'd send them, and he did. They tried to send a few people, but apparently that was the wrong senapati. Didn't work out until Prabhupada. And Prabhupada underwent unbelievable difficulties and austerities to come. How many heart attacks did he have on the boat over?
Two.
Still he came. How old was he? Coming over?
69.
How much money you have in his pocket?
30 rupees.
$7 US.
Which he couldn't cash.
Which he couldn't cash. He had rupees. And he didn't take rupees. You go to an airport in the US and give him rupees? No. Sorry. No rupees. So, that's where we are today. We are blessed beyond what we realize. And it's been given to us. It is a tremendous blessing out of love. It comes from what? What do they want in return? What's the price? There's no price. It's been given freely. Prabhupada didn't take any wage, never asked for any money. Became a multimillionaire. He never had any money, never changed his lifestyle, never bought anything for himself. Never. Wasn't his money. It's Krishna's money. Be careful with Krishna's money, he would say. This is not your money. It's Krishna's money. That's how he thought. So here we are. You can take it or not take it, but I want you to know you're very, very blessed. Because you can go back to Godhead if you take this to your heart. And there is actually a price. Because nothing's free. What is that price? Your surrender. Your surrender. What do I have to surrender? My money? No. Your ego. Your ego. Give yourself. Your true self. Give your soul. Give your soul to God. Whose do you think it is to begin with? It's God's. It's a gift to you from God. All you're doing is giving it back to Him. You're sharing it. How do you share a gift? By recognizing it. No? If you have a beautiful singing voice and you never sing for anybody, then what? You don't share your gift, no? Share your soul. Surrender. That's it. And you'll never have to take birth again. Thank you for your kind attention. Hari. Questions? Now, of course, you know I barely touched on all these pages, don't I? Questions? Comments?
What type of eclipse was that? Was that a solar or a lunar
eclipse? Lunar eclipse. Moon with K2. Lunar eclipse. Lunar eclipse. Eclipse of the heart. Moon represents heart. The heart, the mind, the emotions.
I was just wondering what Mahaprabhu's ascendant was.
Leo. Leo rising. Leo ascendant. Leo lagna. Chandra in Leo. Moon in Leo. Ketu in Leo. So it was right on the eastern horizon. That's where lagna or ascendant is, eastern horizon. The rising sign of the birth chart. Always eastern horizon. Why? Why does the birth chart... And then we go around 12 houses. Right? 12 signs of the zodiac. 12 houses. Why eastern horizon? Does not the eastern horizon begin the day? Where does the sun rise? Where do you rise? Same. Eastern horizon. Most auspicious. Eastern horizon.
Moment of birth, what is that? What's going on at the moment of birth? Is it when the cord is cut, when the baby is fully out of the womb? What is that?
Well, I think it's when you take the breath.
First breath.
Because when you're still attached with the umbilical cord, you are feeding from the mother, no? Which you've been doing for 9 months or 10 lunar months, you're still feeding from the mother. So when you take a breath, when you come out, you know, and if you don't, they smack the bottom or something, and then the baby cries, and then we hear the cry. Now we're interacting with the word. The child's breathing on its own. At least that's my understanding. And because once the child is breathing, cord is cut. They can cut the cord anytime after that. Sometimes they don't do it right away, depending. Cut it and then tie it up, and they do all the other things that, you know, that they do. Depending whether you're at home, which is where you should be, or you're in a hospital, which is where sick people are, my opinion. My first child was born in a birth center in Los Angeles. And we went to see Dr. Abdul, wonderful man. Saw him for 9 months. We were simple devotees. We had no money. We had nothing. I had an old junker of a car. Had to drive an hour to see the doctor. And we had such a wonderful relationship with this doctor. And he had a birth center. He had maybe 3 birthing rooms. He had another doctor that worked with him. And then he had a few midwives. It's very nice. Natural birth. And of course, you know, if you had to go to a hospital, if it was a complication, that was in place. If you had to go. And he said to us, I can't remember when, maybe in the 8th month, he said, we are preparing another birth room. How would you like us to decorate it for you? I said, what? We're going to decorate the birth room in the way that you, the two of you, want for the birth of your child. I said, I don't understand. Isn't it a birth room that will be used by everybody? Yes. But I want it decorated for you. How do you want it? I said, we want it in Indian style. Naturally. He says, then you will have it. And it was decorated so beautifully. And they had madras sort of billowed, hanging from the ceiling, covering the ceiling, and then the lighting coming down, and candles, and we had Prabhupada chanting on the tape player. So it was a lovely, lovely experience. Krishna's mercy. You get close to Krishna, you watch what happens. Believe me. If you think your life is ordinary, not for long. You bored? You want an extraordinary life? Get close to God. Watch what happens. I gave up my musical career, very successful musical career, on the verge of signing my first recording album, my first contract to record my first album with the band that I had formed, I gave it all up for Krishna. Walked away from it. Walked away from the love of my life, music. And I can sit here right now and tell you I've been on 3 gold records subsequently. I recorded on 3 gold records. You probably know what some of them are. That was given to me. That's how it works, my friends. Look at this man. This man, Korma Das, is a brilliant chef. He's known around the world. His books, his videos are embraced around the world. Isn't that not true? That's how it works. That's Krishna's grace. If you got some little talent, watch what happens. And all of a sudden, I'm on the super fast train now. Or you can just live a nice, peaceful, quiet life. It doesn't matter. Okay. Thank you.